Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey everybody, Jacob Daniel here. So this episode is really on the long side. I had a friend of mine, Thomas Queter, on, and we had a long conversation that went into a lot of different topics related to things that he's passionate about, advocating for people with disabilities and showing how the state not only doesn't help these people, but often further cripples them or causes disabilities in the first place. And also going into just kind of voluntarism in general and just, you know, different market solutions that are out there for various problems. And we talked a little bit of politics, a little bit of, you know, just kind of, you know, philosophy in general and everything. So because of the length of this conversation, the file size is too big for me to upload it as one episode, so I have to release it in two different segments to break it up, which might make it easier to listen to rather than trying to, you know, listen to one 2.5 hour podcast all at once. So the only other thing I wanted to say, I'm getting caught up here in terms of the audio stuff. We're getting close to current. I do have some announcements coming soon and changes to the podcast that I'll be announcing soon. So just stay tuned for that. Make sure you're following me on Twitter, which is at Biblical Anarchy, or go to Daniel318.com, or follow me on Facebook, either personally, you know, search for me, Jacob Daniel Winograd, or Daniel3 Biblical Anarchy on Facebook. You know, and that way you'll be able to stay tuned for the announcements that are coming sometime in the next week or so, and I'm super excited to share that with you once we get to it. Other than that, if you want to support what I'm doing in all the different endeavors, you know, this podcast and the other projects I'm working on, you know, patreon.com/biblicalanarchy. If you want to, you know, throw me $5 a month, $10 a month, or, you know, as much as you can, it means a lot if you're able to help out the show. You know, there are certain costs that, you know, you have to pay to be able to put out a podcast with hosting and equipment and, you know, software and all that, as well as, you know, time that I have to spend away from my family or from doing, you know, other work. And so I love what I do. I love what I do. I love advocating for liberty and making the, you know, Christian case for a free society and having, you know, conversations with different people that I hope you guys find interesting, and want to continue to work on giving you guys more content and, you know, helping to enrich your lives and to help the, you know, the liberty movement, broadly speaking. So, you know, if you're able to pitch anything my way, it certainly is much appreciated and will be put to good use. Again, that's patreon.com/biblicalanarchy. And that's it for me. So this will be part one of my conversation with Thomas Queter. Hello, everybody. Jacob Daniel here. This is episode 85 of the Daniel 3 podcast. And thanks for tuning in tonight. This is a pre-recorded episode. And I have a guest tonight that I've talked to a whole bunch. And I've always thought we've had fascinating conversations. And so I thought rather than just, you know, deprive the world of those conversations being accessible to them, we would have one on the show. That way they can enjoy it themselves. I think that we tend to get pretty deep into stuff. So as far as what's going on with the show, as most of you who follow know, I had my fourth child back in May. So, you know, there is no regular schedule at the moment. It literally is just whenever I can manage to find time to record or stream, that's when I find time to record or stream. Hopefully as the baby was born in May, so let me do quick math here. He's 3.5, coming up on 4 months old here soon. Still going to be a weird schedule because we're going to be coming up into holiday season soon around the time he gets to be 6 months old, but hopefully after the holidays I'll get back into more of a consistent release schedule. And I got some cool things in the works right now. I'm working on some collaborative projects with LCI and some other people that we're working on some stuff with. So I just wanted to put that out there. I know it's my episodes tend to be right now either 2 weeks gap or there's two in a row, and I figured I would just give a little bit of an update as far as that goes. Other than that, I don't have anything else really to give. Tonight's guest is someone like I said before at the beginning, him and I have had a lot of conversations. We met over the Clubhouse app back when that became popular, and we've talked about everything, religion, politics, philosophy, voluntarism, weed, drugs, police. He's literally witnessed me having to leave a Clubhouse room because I was getting pulled over by a cop. So lots of fun stories we can reminisce on. But it is my good friend, Thomas the Queter. Thomas, how you doing tonight?
Thomas Queter.
I know. It was a bit of a joke.
Yeah, Thomas Queter really quieted.
Yeah. So Thomas, first time on my show. Maybe you want to introduce yourself, and I don't know. You can do the typical how I became a libertarian spiel that you do on a libertarian podcast, or just give the folks whatever you want to give as far as who you are.
Well, I'm Thomas Queter. I'm an individualist. I would not subscribe to a political party until 2019, so 3 years ago. I subscribed to the Libertarian Party in that year because of Larry Sharp and because of the more rational messaging about things that I was getting from the libertarians in New York and from the libertarians that I met nationally at the time. It's interesting, right? I signed up for a third party. Boy, did I sign up to lose, right? That's what everybody out there is not a libertarian is thinking. And that's fine. You know, it's not about winning. It's about trying. It's about doing the work. It's about spreading messages. When it doesn't matter if it's politics or advertising, maybe you're trying to affect an industry. It doesn't matter. If you have an opportunity to present your perspective and to learn the perspectives of others in whatever group of people you want to interact with, it's necessary to be involved. If you're not involved, you really don't have a whole lot of opportunity to really be heard.
Yeah, sort of like complaining about where the car is going, but never, you know, making any efforts to become someone who would have the ability to put their hands on the steering wheel themselves. It's like you can either show up and it doesn't even particularly have to be just with politics, just, you know, anything in life. If you don't like what's going on, you can be a, you know, armchair quarterback and complain about things, or you can, you know, get off your ass and go do something.
And that's what I liked about 2020. That campaign was amazing. For those who don't know, I ran for state Senate here in New York as a libertarian in 2020. I believe I broke records for the state at that level. I think it was 12.6% over 13,000 votes, and there were some 17,000 people who voted but wouldn't vote in that race, which is interesting. But what I liked about it was that I had to learn that if I want to seek to represent a group of people, constituents, the district, I had to learn that my opinions don't matter. That's not what a representative does. Now, I can interject them. I can guide people with messaging, but I can't tell them what to do or what they should want. And should I win, what they want is my job. So I did have to learn to take on the perspectives, or at least an understanding of the perspectives of other people. And I took a lot of heat for some of that, too. I went to Black Lives Matter rallies. Obviously, that means I must be a socialist.
Am I a socialist now, too?
Right. it seemed to be that criticism came from those who were terrified of socialists.
Yeah, no, it's silly. I mean, I'm a former, you know, Democratic socialist, I guess, as a Bernie Sanders supporter back in the day. So, you know, I mean, I certainly have my issues with Black Lives Matter, but it's kind of like, I mean, we're not getting anywhere by just talking to libertarians.
Right.
I mean, we can sit in a circle jerk and talk about how much we all love liberty, but it's like, okay, well, you know, eventually, and, you know, this criticism, you know, I feel like it applies to so many different groups in general. Everyone has, you know, a group of people they find icky. You know what I mean? Like maybe for people, some people were upset with you or me, or I know like Todd Agopi and others involved in the party, you know, were at least willing to have a conversation with and show up to Black Lives Matter events. And, you know, it's like, oh, they can't stand that. On the other hand, then, you know, I know some people who are more, you know, comfortable trying to do outreach into maybe MAGA circles or Republicans, et cetera. And people go, oh, I can't stand that. And it's like, now listen, I don't, you know, I don't want to dilute libertarianism and turn it into Republican light or, you know, Bernie Sanders Democrat light. But at the same time, it's like if we're going to at some point become a movement or a political party or whatever that, you know, has the numbers that forces the powers that be to deal with us, well, we're going to have to alert, you know, get over aversions to talking to people who have a different philosophical or political perspective than us and trying to find common ground with them to plant seeds that will hopefully eventually, you know, bear fruit into them, you know, if not becoming libertarian, at least being more open to voting for libertarian candidates or supporting libertarian resolutions. I mean, unless you were born a libertarian, a lot of us come from somewhere, you know what I mean? So we have to be open to that. And I never understood from any side, because I think there's multiple sides that do this, you know what I mean? And there's a boogeyman or a group of people that they just don't. And it's like, fine, if they're not for you, that's fine. Like me personally, you know, I've always had a hard time with like the mega Trumpers. Not my thing. I'm more likely to probably engage in a little bit of cyberbullying with some MAGA people than I am in a very thought-provoking conversation, just because I can't get over how much it seems like they've turned Trump into this idol of their he's a golden calf, you know what I mean?
Aren't they all though?
True.
So this is a good point that I like to get on. Another reason I didn't join a political party, despite not even knowing it existed, the Libertarian Party, is because I don't like groupthink. Any groupthink. You put three people in a room who are all saying yes to the same thing, and I lose trust. I lose trust in that thing. I lose trust in whatever it is they're trying to do. And I lose trust in them as individuals, because it's okay to agree with someone, even if it's all those three people agreeing. But shouldn't you at least have enough insight to have something to say about it other than yes?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, there's a difficult balance between, you know, I think the Libertarian Party and its various factions sometimes you have maybe problems of groupthink, and then sometimes you can have problems of people being so worried about groupthink that nothing gets done because people just get caught up in just disagreeing. And it's like, well, to me the baby in the bathwater there is sometimes you have to learn to work with people and to go in the direction that there's a general consensus on, while being able to maintain your voice in saying, well, listen, if this is what we're doing, then okay, that's what we're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I guess a good example would be, I wasn't a big fan of Joe Jorgensen as the 2020 Libertarian presidential nominee. But once that decision was made, it was like, okay, well, my criticisms of her, both before and during that campaign, never ended. But at the same time, I still continue to work as a member of the Libertarian coalition, so to speak, broadly speaking, to advance our goals, even amongst that disagreement. And I guess that's sort of, you know, to me, I think that's just basic mature adulting. I think, unfortunately, you know, a lot of libertarians maybe don't have that skill set at their disposal. But it's kind of like if you've worked on a job site, you know what I mean? Whether you've been an employee or even, you know, I've been self-employed, I've been an employee, I've been the manager, and there's always going to be disagreements, and you have to find ways to work with people and to have functional, positive relationships with people where you can continue to work towards common goals and not, you know, you don't want mindless drones, but you don't want, you know, people who do nothing but you know, endlessly replay the libertarian meme of, oh, you won't tell me what to do. It's like, well, I won't tell you you have to do this, but at some point, if we want to get stuff done, we got to go do stuff. Again, it's kind of hearkening back to what I said at the beginning, like people who just like to complain and don't like to do things. There's as many, there's more opinions than there are libertarians. You know what I mean? I don't care if people disagree with me. It's just like, but can we work together? That's all I care about.
Hang on.
Thomas, here's your reminder. Go to bed.
And Thomas has already been taken over by the Bill Gates dystopian AI future. And he's being told what to do.
Wrong mogul. And I set that myself. hopefully we can just cut that out. But if I don't set that reminder and I'm working, I'll look up a few minutes later and it's 4 a.m.
Oh, I've been there. Yeah.
That's just habitual. If I'm focused, I just keep going. So I set that reminder not to actually go to bed at 10, but so it is on my mind.
Right.
I only sleep 4 to 6 hours. But I want to get back to something you were talking about a minute ago, the arguing and the infighting and you know, you and I have had a lot of discussions about messaging and the differences between bold messaging and, well, being a dick. And I want to get on that for a minute. I'm actually going to go ahead and I'm going to blame Obama. I mean, he's the one that started this social media politics craze. And ever since then, it's just gotten worse. And you see people, quote unquote, ganging up on the internet and wasting all their time on Twitter or Facebook making political arguments. And what is that doing? Where's the action there? Right? Because, I mean, let's face it, Twitter, if I'm correct here, is more for reaching the media because they're the ones who watch it more. I believe Instagram has an age range. Facebook is now in the older age range for people to reach. And none of them are very effective. As far as actually reaching people with a message that can be heard and understand and isn't incomplete. And that's where we really fail, right? Because, and not just libertarians, but humanity fails on the internet because our attention spans are not as high as we'd like to think they are. I don't care how smart a person is or how involved a person is. Most people give you 2 seconds and one image to get your point across. And most people will take any chance they can because it's been bred into us over generations of public education, the 24-hour news cycle, political rhetoric is ingrained this in our society that we have to knee-jerk react in whatever negative way possible.
Yeah.
Sometimes
Twitter only serves to enhance that.
The number of people I've counseled over their anxiety from social media is astounding and disturbing.
I agree with you, and I tend to have that same message for the people who maybe are out there doing nothing but edgelording and shitposting, but also for the people who seem to do nothing but find time to be offended by the people who are out there edgelording and shitposting. It's like,
the interesting thing is those edgelords also get equally offended about other issues and will do the same thing back.
Oh yeah. Now they're kind of two sides of the same coin. So yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, I think there's certainly, you know, a utility to making sure that you put out a good message. And I think Twitter can be, Facebook can be, you know, all these things. You know, obviously I'm in the podcasting sphere. I think that putting a message out there is important, you know, but you got to have something actionable behind that message. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'll use, just because this is my podcast, and so I'll go on theme here and use Jesus as an example. You know, Jesus talked a good talk, but if he didn't walk the walk, he wouldn't have had the following he had. You know, it's like he didn't just go out there and preach about, you know, telling people to live out the kingdom of God in their lives. Like he demonstrated that time and time again. So people followed him. You know, maybe they were initially drawn in by the things he had to say, but what made them stick around and have maybe life-changing experiences from his ministry, you know, was as much the things he did that backed up the things he said as, you know, it wasn't just like Jesus went around and you know, his entire ministry was just talking. There was a lot of action behind that. So yeah, now that, again, because you do need the talking, because if you're just out there doing things and it's not getting promoted, well, you know, that might not be good either. So you have to have both. You need the action, you need the promotion, you need to grab people's attention. And, you know, I think insofar as division of labor is a libertarian principle, you know, there's going to be different roles people fall into. And sure, I tend to sometimes enjoy people who do shit posting well, because I think there's good shit posting and bad shit posting. Like, I love the sort of trolling of the ATF and the IRS and the three-letter agency that Spike Cohen does. I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. It's like art. Then there's some people who, you know, don't necessarily do a good job at doing that, or it's a mixed bag at the very least. And you know, so it's and there's times where I'm sitting there clapping, and there's times that I'm annoyed by it and upset. But I also go, you know what? It's people's attention spans are short, like you said, which means that, you know, 2 months from now, people won't remember the dumb thing some libertarian said on the internet.
Yes and no, right? So their attention span is short enough that they're not going to pay attention to have that conversation or necessarily read the thread. But their attention spans are strong enough to remember anybody who says, I hate whatever or whoever, or right? And we were talking about messaging earlier, and this is something personal to me from the 2020 campaign in particular. I mean, I had someone look me in the eye over Zoom and tell me that I wanted the poor and disabled to die because I'm a libertarian.
Well, that puts you in an awkward position, doesn't it?
I turned her into a supporter. but here's the thing, right? There's messaging that's going to stick and be proliferated when it's not handled well. And, you know, I don't really want to spend this whole podcast talking about messaging, right? Point being, back to why I love the 2020 campaign, we were busy. We were campaigning. 4 to 7 days a week, I got up at 4 or 5 a.m., was out the door by 7, not back till 7 or 9, and did it over again. Right? We went out to every single small community in the district. It's 4 counties wide. Big counties in New York, maybe not as big as the counties in some other states, but there's some of the bigger ones in New York, and it takes 2.5 hours to cross it from the longest distance, the district that I ran in. And, you know, I'm almost ashamed to say this, but I saw a lot of places I had never seen before, even though I've lived here all of my life.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I went door knocking this past few months for the trying to get some of our candidates in Pennsylvania on the ballot. I mean, even in my own neck of the woods, I was going into neighborhoods I didn't really, you know, probably had driven past 1,000 times, never really knew that they were there, or didn't know, like, oh, there's a park here. Oh, there's a school here, you know. And then there's so much people can get really focused on, you know, metrics and stuff about social media engagement. But I think the type of engagement that local activism in your community face to face does is so much more important. I mean, I had a really interesting interaction when I was out door knocking. You know, I, you know, knocked on someone's door, they answered the door, gave them the general spiel, and they went, oh no, no offense, I don't want to support the Libertarian Party at all, because all you guys do is steal votes away from the Republicans. I was like, you know, and you know, a lot of times people just say no, you kind of like, okay, whatever, thanks for it. I felt inclined in this particular instance to push back a little and go, well, you know, it varies, we take from Democrats too sometimes, it probably evens out over a long time frame,
right? And so it actually depends where you are,
right?
So states that are democratically controlled, meaning that the Democrat Party has control, like New York, you're going to get more Republicans interested in your party, and vice versa, in opposite, right? I mean, look at Kansas. Look what happened in Kansas with the abortion thing, right? It was not libertarians and Democrats in Kansas who came out to vote for a majority to keep their right for abortion. It was largely Republicans and independents. They believe in their freedoms and their rights. And they believe in, you know, and you can take an abortion argument any which way you want. I'm kind of on both sides. I don't like it, but I don't want to make a law about it. But regardless, those were not libertarians who made their vote, right?
Right.
But that was a libertarian vote because it exercised the right to freedom. And why do I state that it exercises a right to freedom to support, quote, abortion rights? You know me, Jacob. We've had these conversations. You know I don't particularly like abortion, particularly considering that I am now a 39-year-old non-viable fetus by New York State standards. If I were born today, as I was in 1983, a doctor could coerce my poor parents, they were definitely financially poor, to abort. And in fact, CPS tried to take me, you know, we can take care of him. He's going to be a burden. You don't need your own child. Da, da, da. And my mother threatened to cut social worker's heart out. Yeah, no joke. So, do I like abortion? No. But I do like keeping a government that doesn't know how to legislate anything properly out of it. So to speak more directly to that, I know you're aware, your listeners may or may not be aware, I'm also a disabilities advocate. I've been doing advocacy for disability issues for many years before I was a libertarian. And I have worked across the country remotely with that regard. I have talked to parents who have been the subject of that coercion I discussed about what would happen with myself today in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they chose to do it or not, they were scarred by it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, and then if you're institutionalized as a person with a disability in a state institution, well, in New York, abortion is legal. Guess what they're going to try to make you do and probably succeed? Have an abortion, whether you want it or not. Right? No choice. Similarly, in a state that's completely anti-abortion, which most of them that go anti-abortion don't have enough stipulations for the reasons that the majority of people who are anti-abortion actually say, well, that's okay. Then someone who's disabled in an institution who willingly has sex and wants the child that they're carrying, or sorry, I got that backwards. That would be New York. In a state where it's not allowed, right? It could be rape. It could be potentially life-threatening. It could kill the person to go to term. There are instances like that that happen. And when an abortion is not allowed in some states, guess who suffers?
Right.
So, I mean, where do you draw the line at rights and reasons, right? I don't like most of the reasons of today for abortion. I don't think financial issues should be the reason for abortion. However, I think if we're really against abortion, maybe we should try to fix the broader problem with the financial issues.
What isn't that like, you know, because that is the libertarian mindset, I think, at play. And I'm pretty much right there with you because, you know, I'm very passionate in my, you know, disdain for abortion. I think it's the one issue I've been pretty consistent on, no matter what my political affiliation. I know I was a bit of a outcast in my days as a Democrat because I was very anti-abortion. But I think the issue is that as libertarians, we tend to look at a problem and, you know, have this really insane extremist radical idea of going, hey, you know, how do we actually solve the problem? not you know, pontificating about we need to make sure that these bad things are banned on paper, that we get certain people in certain offices who have some kind of, you know, cloak of legitimacy wrapped around them by this system. You know, they need to put words to paper that say this thing is bad. And, you know, what are the consequences of that? Whatever. Is that going to lead to less of this happening? Are there any unintended consequences of this? Doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It's like, what's funny is a lot of people on the right and the people who are anti-abortion love to throw the word virtue signaling around. And it's ironic. In this instance, I often feel like the anti-abortion statists are really guilty of a bit of virtue signaling, because to them it's much more about winning the battle of moral outrage as opposed to how do we decrease the number of abortions from happening, which is my primary, like, I'm so anti-abortion, I have this radical idea and mindset of how do I reduce abortions, not how do I
get my moral principle enshrined onto a piece of paper. And that's really the difference in mindsets at play here. And it applies to abortion. It applies to so many different issues. Now I want to be clear. I'm sympathetic to maybe a pro-life person who's a libertarian or at least liberty-minded who, you know, you can make the argument, oh, well, if I'm a libertarian who's not an anarchist who thinks we should have some minimal state that, you know, and if there is a minimal government or state, they're the one of the most basic functions, like one of the only things we want it to exist for is to protect people's rights and to, you know, one of those rights being the right to not be murdered. So shouldn't the government at the very least ban abortion? It's like, well, I hear that argument. I think, A, where that argument fails is that, A, I'm not a minarchist, so there you go. But secondly, even if I try to really put on my minarchist hat, I don't think that being a minarchist means, again, that the goal is, well, you know, what are the laws that we ideally want in a sort of utopian sense? It's more like, you know, what is your goal with the law and how are you going to enforce it? It's like, because you can put words to paper, but if it's just words to paper without any way, I get going back to what we talked about at the beginning, if there's no action behind the message, nothing happens, right? So it's like, what are you going to do? Like, let's get to brass tacks. What are you going to do with this law to actually push back against abortion?
Right. So
some people, you know, go ahead.
This is another one of those instances where it's too complicated to expect the government to actually address the issue in a nuanced way, because there are many different individuals in many different situations and many different locations and many different religions and many different financial situations and many different this and many different that and micro machines, right? I sound like that guy.
These people can't even get the roads right. Like,
right? Flat, no, flat. Exactly. Like, we want a government that can't build a road at a fair price to legislate morality over 350 million people. I mean, this is the same government that claimed it could stop a virus.
Yeah, right.
And, yeah, exactly. And I'm not a pandemic denier, not a COVID denier. I will tell you and your audience, I've had COVID 3 times and twice it almost killed me.
Well, you know, my dad almost died from COVID. I'm yeah, very familiar with it.
Right, but there are more people than you and me, right?
No.
So I'm not a COVID denier, but I'm also very practical about it.
Yeah.
I don't think shutting down the economy was a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's now we have this new virus called inflation or inflat. I don't know how to pronounce it or something like that. You know what I mean? Inflation,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
Causing all the prices to go up. But I don't know. Biden has a new bill for it. So we should be set.
So that's another interesting thing, right? A lot of people rail against democracy, right? Because that's mob rule. And I kind of get their point, because in today's democracy of the U.S., that's correct. But the principles of democracy are not what it is here today. And
I'm okay with democracy in a vacuum. Like, I mean, listen, if you want to have a private business that you decide things through some kind of democratic process, it's like, what's wrong with democracy isn't the people voting and coming to some sort of majority consensus to make decisions.
Right. No, what's wrong with democracy is the same thing as wrong with every other kind of government.
Right. It's the gun that people introduce. It's like, you know.
It's greed, cronyism, corruption,
right?
Power.
Like if my church has a vote tomorrow to like, so I mean, I'm pretty open with my religious views as a social conservative. You know, two different hats here. Libertarian, I will fight for and advocate for the rights of all people, including people to participate in things that I would, as a Christian, not participate in or condone. That includes maybe an example like homosexual marriage. I'm not on a personal social level an advocate for that. I don't think it's compliant with my religious worldview. So let's say my church, like the elders and the body, voted tomorrow and they decided, you know what, we're going to allow homosexual marriage in our church.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Well, I have two choices, right? I can go, all right, maybe I'm wrong. I'm going to change my mind, or maybe I'm just not going to care that much. Or I can go, all right, bye. I'm going to go to a different church, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The only point that would be wrong would be if I went, yeah, you know what? You guys do what you want. I'm going to go somewhere else. And then they decided to, you know, with guns, trap me in there and go, no, you can't leave. You're going to be part of this church the rest of your life unless you pay some kind of massive fee to leave and go to a different church, and you're going to be forced to use part of your income to pay for the things that you don't want to pay for, and all that. Like it's democracy is fine until you implement the use of coercion to enforce those results. That's the problem.
So you're right to an extent, but there's more problems wrong with specifically our country's democracy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that really has more to do with cronies and greed.
Oh, yeah, lobbyists, special interest groups, money and politics, yeah.
Yeah, we like to blame our politicians, right? And I get that, right? I mean, oh, it's all Joe Biden's fault, you know, because he's completely there. He's not senile. He's making all of those decisions himself.
Right.
He's not a puppet. Nobody's paying anybody to control him. I think that's a farce, right? I mean, to literally hate Biden for what he says today is like to hate your grandmother who's got dementia and is going off in something wacky about the 1920s, right? I mean, I don't like Biden for his entire political career. And I will say that. But to be so awful today to the man.
It is kind of punching down.
Right. So, we have to, if we're going to make those criticisms, we have to recognize that it's more than him. Or else, our energy is wasted in the wrong direction.
Well, and it's always, it goes back to the, it doesn't matter if it's red or blue in office, the same policies, whether it's war, whether it's the borders, whether it's the war on drugs and the mass incarceration and the police state, the overregulation state, like all this stuff kind of more or less stays the same, no matter who's in office. It might have a different branding, you know what I mean? It's like we're almost fighting over what color to paint the walls. It's almost that arbitrary.
Well, and actually the pandemic's a great, great example. Because, I mean, the stimulus started before Biden took office.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
The vaccine started before. It was Trump's vaccine, remember?
Yes. That's exactly,
Operation Warp Speed.
Say, right? I mean, he subsidized the very vaccine that the Republicans tried to win on railing against. And it's just, it's so strange. And I'm in New York, right? So we know who Trump is. We know he's a limousine Democrat.
Right.
You know that term, limousine Democrat?
Oh, yeah. Well, and even the way anyone who's, you know, especially from the city, like listening to Trump talk, it just reminds me of listening to any, like, not any, but like a lot of New Yorkers talk. Okay, people are like, oh, he's so hyperbolic. And so like, yeah, like that's, you know, you go to New York and you go to like, you know, just like pick a random diner or a restaurant and like the establishment owner probably would talk to you in a very similar fashion. Like, I mean, you might not like it, but it's like, that's there's a bit of that culture up there for sure.
Yeah, I have to disagree with you. Most of the people I run into, particularly restaurant and shop owners, and I spent actually for the first time in my life 3 weeks in New York City this spring during petitioning. I don't think they're as bad. I think people can be that bad. But
I think Trump's especially bad on that front. I just meant regardless.
But the point I'm trying to make is I think business owners know enough to not drive away business.
Well, they also know they're you know what I mean? Like sometimes it's like people know their regulars and so they'll, you know, shoot the shit with their regulars. And it almost reminds me, have you ever watched the movie Gran Torino with Clint Eastwood?
Not a big TV guy.
It was a small scene in there where the character that Clint's playing goes in to get his hair cut, and him and the barber like are like just trading these like the worst insults to each other. And then the boy that Clint's trying to like mentor in this movie comes, sits down to the chair, and like says the same exact thing to the barber that Clint did. And then the barber's like, "Whoa, what the f-?" and starts freaking out. And he's like, "Well," he's like, "you know, like I know him. We can do that to each other. You can't do that to someone you haven't met before." And so, like a lot of times, the my experiences in New York, because my uncle lived there for almost my entire life, and we'd go there. Like my uncle was like a super soft spoken person, but then we'd go to like these different restaurants or, you know, places in his neighborhood, and the people would like talk awful to each other, but in sort of like that endearing way. That's I wouldn't say it's even that, that's in a generic sense, that's not unique to New York, but I don't know, there's a New Yorkian way to do it that I recognize when I see it.
Well, so I mean, there's New York City and then there's upstate, and a lot of us, yeah, upstate, well, until more recent generations, but I was still one of those stragglers. We were raised in the barn.
Yeah.
Typically, as a kid around here, you're told if you're going to swear in the barn. Right? It's hard work. It's frustrating. You get a lot of reasons to swear because, you know, it's not easy work. And you'll find that on any job site. You'll find that if you've ever been on a construction site, those guys are likely going to swear once in a while.
Yeah.
So
but anyway, but your point, we got a little derailed there. The point about Trump,
talking about messaging and Trump, right?
Yeah.
What has Trump done in his life?
He's done a lot of things.
He's used popularity to build his business.
Oh yeah. And
so he knows how to be popular. And he knows how to get the right reactions from the right groups of people, and it doesn't matter which group of people it is. I mean, we all remember The Apprentice. He was building his brand, and he was making himself look like a good leader.
Oh, yeah. And you could tell, there were so many times that you could tell Trump was trying desperately to get the Democrats to like him or to support him on certain things. I mean, you know, sometimes really pissed me off the most where there were times where he would like say, like, you know, anytime people go, "Oh, he was the most libertarian president of our lifetime." I'm like, do you ever hear the man talk about guns?
He was, yeah.
He was almost worse.
But when he held the Bible upside down.
Oh, no, no, don't even get me started about that. No, signing the Bible, Trump signing the Bible at rallies. I lost my freaking mind.
Yeah, there's a golden calf. There's a
are you kidding me? Like, there's nobody in the world that you should ask to sign your Bible. But if there was like the last person in the world who you should ask to sign your Bible, you know, I don't know if it'd be Trump, but he'd be in consideration for that.
maybe your own pastor, right?
I don't know, like something. Like if you went to like I don't know, if you met Billy Graham when he was still alive, or you met some like even that, I would not like, but it would be so much less cringe than going to a Trump rally and asking Trump to sign your Bible. Like, wow. Like, tell me that you haven't read the Bible without telling me you haven't read the Bible.
Yeah. Well, and he did it immediately. I mean, that was the BLM quote riots in DC, right? First, he had people beaten back so that he could walk out there to hold the Bible upside down. I mean, that's just, I mean, if that's not pandering, and if that's not a sure, obvious sign of a direct lie to the people he expects their support from, I don't know what it is. And I mean, we see the same thing on the other side. I don't want to rail just against Republicans. I spent most of my life railing against the Democratic Party because I'm disabled and I like to live.
Well, with other politicians, like they would contradict themselves, but you have to kind of go over like months or years to find the contradictions. With Trump, it could be like two headlines from the same day or whatever. It was like in real time, you would catch it and stuff. It was wild. I mean, in some sense, it was almost entertaining because Trump is kind of entertaining because he has that background. It was like, you know, I would be more entertained by this though if it didn't like hold the lives of millions of people here and abroad in the balance.
the dementia analogy that I made with Biden earlier in my mind also applies to Trump. Whether he's being controlled by people or not may be a different story, but he's definitely not all there in my mind. He can't be.
Yeah, he's not. He's not even playing 2D chess, let alone the five-dimensional upside down, you know, space chess that the Trump supporters like to think he's playing. We could go on about Trump for hours. I have a particular
or Biden, Hillary, yeah. Or Bush, or Obama, or I mean, pick one, right?
Right. Well, one of the things that the two parties consistently fail to do, which is something that I wanted to talk about because this is an area you have a lot of experience in. You know, that every politician, whether left or right, in their own way, tries to sell a message of we're going to take care of you. The Democrats, it's with the social programs. With the Republicans, maybe they don't emphasize the social programs, but it'll be like, oh, we're going to cut taxes and, you know, some kind of lip service to my freedoms and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you know, we're kind of left on our own no matter who's in charge. So, you know, a lot of people will often, you know, oh, libertarians, well, you know, how are you going to take care of people when they're old or they're disabled or, you know, they lose their jobs or the market crashes? You know, we've tried laissez-faire capitalism, you know, in the past, and people starve to death on the streets and whatnot. And,
wait,
you know,
when
how
did we try that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but back when Rockefeller was lobbying to the government to have monopolies over big oil and stuff, is that's when we did free market capitalism, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Go back to the railroads. The government's been supporting monopolies for how long? I think before that it was a shipping industry, slave trade. I mean, you name it, right?
Yep.
Now, I live in New York. New York is a Democratic controlled state, or a Democrat party.
By the way, you say I live in New York almost like I used to say I was a vegan back when I was a vegan. Just like you.
Well, a lot of people in New York feel that way. Most of us don't like it here as far as the government is concerned. A lot
I had
of
to bring that up.
The option to leave, and the rest of us have large families and other reasons to stay. Welfare program. That's an oxymoron. The way they're perpetrated, because there's nothing well about it, and it's certainly not for someone's welfare. What they're saying is, I pity you. I see you as less. Here's some crumbs. Mm. And because you're getting these crumbs, we're going to restrict your constitutional rights.
Oh, by the way, the crumbs are from the food that we stole from you anyway.
Yeah. Right? So what people have failed to realize, and this is one of those things that is more nuanced and needs to be communicated appropriately and likely slowly, right? Because people don't change their minds like that typically, specifically with politics, right? How do we replace welfare? How do we not let the poor and disabled die? Remember that came up. Well, there are quite a few reasons. There are quite a few avenues towards that. One of them is improving the economy without force. When you improve an economy, the communities within that economy tend to have more. And you know, we're also cynical. We think that people won't help people. But we fail to remember, this is my favorite statistic, by the way, people who reside within the United States are statistically the most generous giving of dollars people on earth. And I believe it's the same for time and goods like food to food banks. But more specifically, of dollars, despite our tax rates, despite our workload, despite all of these other forms of oppression, we are the most generous people on earth. Now, do you have anybody in your family with disabilities? Or elder, right? Aging becomes a disability.
My dad, I guess, after he's got like long COVID complications and some disabilities that have come from that. Right. I have had relatives in the past who had disabilities who have since passed, but I can remember when they were struggling.
Right. So my question to you then, right? And this is for example, I'm not trying to lead your show. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Are you going to allow them to suffer and die?
Oh no.
Even if the government's not helping them?
Yeah, well, I mean, the government's not helping them, so yeah.
So if the quote unquote taxes, which let's face it, the percentage of your taxes that are for welfare that come out are very low in regards to individuals within our country, right? Corporate welfare is a different story. Foreign aid welfare is a different story. But as far as to individuals, it's minuscule. However, if you were to, let's call it $10, right? Let's say everything that comes out of your paycheck for that week that goes to social welfare is $10. It's just a nice even number. Are you going to go buy yourself some candy, or are you going to take care of the person you love who needs help?
Right. Yeah. No, it's.
So people make better decisions than any organizations with regard to the individual.
Yeah, that's true. And even private charitable organizations tend to make better decisions. And also more of the money tends to actually go towards the people they're supposed to help, and not as much an overhead. I mean, even I remember looking at statistics and like some people were like ranking the worst charities, and I remember like one of the ones at the top was like, oh yeah, only 80% of their proceeds go to the people that they're aimed to help. I was like, that's still like 30% better than government welfare programs at best.
Yeah.
That's me saying half of the government money goes to the people it needs is being rather charitable.
It's minuscule, actually. I mean, because when it comes to what goes directly to people, it's very, very little. So I'm on the board of a couple of nonprofits. One in particular, I can tell you, struggles over the costs and restraints put upon it by the government. Hmm. So do you think maybe that that nonprofit you're discussing, that 80% went towards whoever. Do you think maybe that percentage would be even better if they didn't have so much red tape, if they didn't have liabilities with regard to workers, right? I mean, we're all pretty much against like income tax and withholding and Social Security because it's failing.
How many people, I mean, I can think of a lot of people I know who have had disabilities happen because they were in such poor economic conditions that they sort of felt forced into less than ideal circumstances that led to them being injured, whether it was working too many hours and getting hurt in the job, or you know, people getting in car accidents because they were you know, driving late at night because they're having to work two jobs. And there's like there's you know, it's sort of like it reminds me of sort of like something that I think Hayek said once. It's sort of like the seen and the unseen, you know, the intended and the unintended consequences of certain actions and policies. And, you know, people can often, you know, think very easily of examples of like seen consequences of the damage that the government does to the economy by taking away people's, you know, hard-earned income from them. But there's so much more than just, oh, it's harder to make ends meet. Like, you know, there can be compounding, crippling, you know, effects in people's lives. I mean, heck, my own dad and the whole situation where he got COVID, I mean, his health had been going through the toilet before he got COVID, largely because after Obamacare got passed, a lot of the medications that he needed were like no longer being covered correctly. And so he had to go try different medications that didn't work as well and that were causing like, you know, side effects and different things, and damaged his thyroid and his kidneys. So he was already not, you know, I mean, you know, he wasn't the picture of health before Obamacare, but he was at least like able to get decent insurance and get medications that allowed him to live a normal life. And then after, you know, a couple years of the Affordable Care Act, he just kept, you know, having to, he'd go to the doctor sometimes like 2 or 3 times a month because he was trying to try different medications out or fight to get the insurance companies to pay for things. Yep. I mean, it was just a mess.
Story of my life. The interesting thing there is that these systems, they don't help and they're so convoluted. If you're out there and you think specifically the social welfare programs work correctly, feasibly, within the budgets that they're supposed to, I'm going to urge you to find yourself, not just one, but a handful of people who are social workers. Don't go into their job because they won't talk to you about it there. Make friends with them. They'll open up to you. And they'll tell you just how shit their job is and just how horrible, horrible these systems are at being effective.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, look, our social workers have a higher rate of psych disorders, a higher rate of suicide, a higher rate of quitting a job, a higher rate of becoming abusive over stress, right? We all recognize that when someone is too stressed out and they lose control of their emotions, it can become a thing and it can become permanent and then they become an abuser. These are all effects of the government.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, you know, people, money isn't a cure-all, right? Like, you can't just put money in people's pockets and expect that everything would be magically better. But at the same time, it's sort of like if someone is in poor financial straits because of their own bad decisions, that's one thing. But if somebody, you know, was doing fine, walking, you know, like walking down the road, and then a mugger comes up, like breaks their leg, takes all their belongings and leaves them like bleeding on the road, and then you go up to help them and people go, oh, you're just going to go and help them and give them a handout?
think it's going to help them? It's like, yeah, probably, you know, or what really would have helped them is maybe if they weren't mugged in the first place.
Well, you know, similarly, maybe somebody broke their leg snowboarding and they chose to go snowboarding. That's a poor decision in that instance if they don't know how to snowboard and they break their leg. I think there are plenty of instances where people do things to themselves. Sure. And you make bad choices or bad decisions that put them in spots where they should still be helped. I just don't believe in forcing that help. That's the
right.
That's the number one thing.
Well, and the Christian element here, like when Jesus said, you know, that which you do unto the least of these, you've done unto me. It's like, well, yep. You know, the operative word there is what you have done, not what you advocated for the government to do via coercion and force, taking people's money at the point of a gun to distribute to other people. You're not going to go to heaven, and Jesus is not going to give you a nice, you know, you advocated for large risk redistributionist policies, and, you know, I felt super loved by those. You know, you didn't give a dime out of your own pockets to anybody, but, you know, you advocated for other people to go and steal to give to other people, and by God, that, yeah, you definitely followed that command to the T and understood the heart of it.
So that actually kind of brings me to something. I like the concept. I don't know how we'll get there, but it's something that I think about a lot of what some people call voluntary taxes. But then again, I wouldn't like to call it a tax if it's voluntary.
Right.
Let's say, you and I, we just said that we don't like abortion, but we don't want to legislate against it. Maybe we could have a fund that's administered by a third party that's overseen by our government that we can personally donate to help people who are considering abortions over financial reasons.
Yeah, which is statistically shown to be one of the most substantial, you know, as far as elective abortions, it's kind of at the top of, you know, you have financial reasons, then you have often right behind that is people being pressured by a family member. Or the spouse or partner who participated in the, yeah. Well, okay, that too. Yeah, for sure, that too. Although that, I don't think that shows up in the studies, oddly enough. But
here's some things we do know, right? Well, you and I, and libertarians particularly, we understand the nature of our educational system and what that means. Doctors are very well educated, been in school a long time. They have more money, more affluency. That makes them more likely to be Democrats.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Jacob?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Do you mean it makes them more likely to, like,
coerce abortion of those with disabilities? Yes.
Oh.
or people who are black, or people who are poor. And they may actually think they're doing the right thing, but they're wrong. And the situation always comes down to duress, imposition, coercion, right? And when I say duress, I mean being under duress. I know you're not female, Jacob, but I bet you could imagine that if you were giving birth and the baby was crowning and the doctor tried to convince you to have an abortion, you would find that to be an inappropriate time.
Yeah. Yeah. God. Yeah. It's so, I mean, it's like sometimes I get really triggered by the abortion topic only because as much as I'm a libertarian, I can't stand the pro-choice movement. And I can't stand when people try to conflate a libertarian position on abortion with being pro-choice. It's like, no, I'm definitely not. Like, or here's the thing. Or, you know, sometimes I feel like what we need to do is actually just co-op the pro-choice language and say, like, you know, here's the thing. Democrats really aren't pro-choice. They're pro you having one choice, which is abortion. You know what I mean? So, it's like they don't like to present to you with all the different options. It's like, right. Well, you this can is, either...
This is another instance of groupthink going wrong.
Yeah.
Initially, right, what did people want when it came to abortion rights? They wanted the ability, the right to, without persecution. They wanted a medical setting instead of, I don't know,
there's also an argument.
it's also an argument for the right to privacy, because it's kind of like, now, and this is more true now than it used to be, because now we have, you know, abortions that can be performed through just the a pill being prescribed to you. And
we have cameras everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, do we want to promote a sort of culture where people are going around and going, I think she was pregnant. Now she's not pregnant anymore. We should, you know, call the police and have them, or, you know, God forbid, like the police are doing that, or doctors are doing that, or, like, you know, we don't want to increase the ability of the government to serve, you know, be watching us. And I mean, God, like, can we remember the last time a major argument was made for increasing government surveillance in the name of saving lives, like, and how well that's gone? Yeah. Patriot Act. Like, we don't want a Patriot Act to save fetus lives. It's like, you know, we should actually just, you know, at the end of the day, because you can put that law on paper, but at the end of the day, what's going to happen is the woman's going to be standing in front of the mirror with the abortion pill she either acquired legally or illegally, and she's the one who has the power to take it or not.
And that's a best case scenario.
Yeah.
In more impoverished areas, you will see back alley abortions. You will see sloppy work. People try to tell me the coat hanger was never a thing, but I've actually spoken to people whose parents have used it. I mean, so obviously at some point in one instance or another, it was a thing, and it's well known. And it's also a symbol of the abortion movement. So there's some shtick to it, right? And what does that mean? What does that actually mean? That means that desperate people are going to do desperate things, whether you make it legal or not. I mean, we see this with drug use. We see this with violent crime. We see this with theft. We see this with white collar crime, right? The minute someone is desperate, or, and this is the important thing, is made to feel that they're desperate, they will do desperate things.
Well, it's also like, it's just like, again, to if I could even put my minarchist hat on for a second, you know, it's kind of like government, if it is to exist at all, should only be involved in matters where there's really no nuance. You know what I mean? Like, hey, you were caught on videotape going up to this man on the street and shooting him 5 times in the chest and he's dead. So, like, you know, pretty clear cut. No real nuance there. Like, you know, you murdered him.
Wait, so have you started active duty as a cop now?
No. I haven't shot any dogs yet. You know, it's but or it's like, hey,
wait. I just want to point out, you didn't say you haven't shot any people.
I plead the fifth. You know, or like an issue of like a property rights dispute. It's like, you know, hey, I think this person built their fence on my property line. It's like, all right, I want to go to the deed of the property and determine where the property line is. Like, you know, arbitrating property disputes or clear you killed someone, you know, out walking around, like, you know, you could make minarchist arguments for that. The government, you know, is always a blunt tool, but it can be used in those instances. The minute we have situations that require some nuance, the government is so ill-equipped to handle those, even if it was completely filled with moral righteous people, which, you know, that's of course always the case, right? The most moral righteous people are the ones who tend to seek political power, of course.
Wait. You mean to tell me people who virtue single run for office? And on both sides? So I mean, I want to talk about it. This came up. Well, this is the second time now we're talking about virtue signaling. What is a virtue? What is a virtue to you may not be a virtue to me, and what is a virtue to me may not be a virtue to you. And if we're talking about it, promoting it, we're signaling it. Name one person who doesn't signal their own virtues. It may not be what's, say, described in the Bible as a virtue, or what's commonly thought of as a virtue, but if to you it's a virtue and you're signaling it, yours virtue signaling. The Republicans do it, the Democrats do it, the Libertarians do it, you and I do it, everybody does it, because if we didn't, we wouldn't have virtues and we wouldn't be trying to spread them.
Yeah, I can hear what you're saying. I mean, I think I could push back on that a little, but I don't want to get too far off topic. I think
the point that I was trying to make is that just because we have different virtues doesn't mean that any one of us is not or is virtue signaling.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And I think, you know, on you know, again, the government being a blunt instrument, it's like, you know, how do you use the government to legislate abortion in all these different instances where there's different things at play? And there are some situations that are very morally ambiguous that that you know, again, think about how binary, think about the binary thinking that you run into just at the DMV. And then imagine trying to process something complicated like a woman with a complicated pregnancy through government processes as a means to solve that. And what you're going to lead to is what the government would probably over time do if abortion was largely something pushed into its control would be, you know what, we can't have all these people going around just having sex whenever they want, getting pregnant whenever they want. This leads to so many pregnancies that are just, you know, so ambiguous or unviable, and it's reckless endangerment of people's lives to get pregnant and either know that you wouldn't be able to carry the baby to term or the baby's likely going to have some kind of health problem. You probably, you know, so, you know, it doesn't seem to me that far-fetched to think the government would start restricting how many kids you can have, restricting, you know, you can't even get pregnant unless you've gotten some kind of government license for procreation. I mean, like that sounds crazy, but there's countries that have done stuff like that. You know what I mean? Well,
and so that's actually a rather decent point. What sounds crazy, and again, this doesn't matter what side of anything you're ever on.
Imagine explaining income tax to the founding fathers.
What sounds crazy is always more plausible than you think it is.
Right. Yeah. Like imagine trying to convince the founding fathers that the income tax would be a thing. Like it'd be like, what? No, that would never happen.
Or that the tax on tea is as high as it is.
Right. Yeah. That was my post this last 4th of July. I was like, hey, here are the tax rates that the founding fathers, I mean, I'm not saying they went to war over the tax rate alone, but just like, hey, just for a point of comparison, here were the tax rates then, here are the tax rates now. Just food for thought.
Yeah, so it was tax rates, but it was also true property ownership rather than fiefdom.
Representation, taxation without representation. There was also the just the, you know,
resource.
There was a large cry from people that they just wanted to be sovereign. They were like, you know what, like we want to, like a lot of them weren't even just like anti-tax. They were like, we want to have our own taxes that we come up with and that we impose upon ourselves and aren't imposed by the crown. So
again, that comes down to resources, because at the time, I believe they would be required to send so much of whatever they produce or harvest, you know, back home. Somebody was making money and it wasn't the 13 colonies.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of the day, it's I guess the thread that runs through all these different topics is just, you know, life's complicated and messy. And I never try to sell libertarianism as this sort of like magic fix, this magic philosophy that would result in some sort of utopia where everybody gets along and there's no issues and no conflicts. And that's
where we fail. That's where we fail. The Democrats and Republicans sell that all day long.
I know. Yeah. But like to them, it's almost easier because it's like they're actually selling something. They're like, hey, we will give you X. Whereas libertarians are like, no, we aren't going to give you anything other than leaving you alone. But, you know, it's not, to me, it's not that libertarianism makes things better, because to me, it's like libertarianism should be the status quo. And statism and authoritarianism, like these are people coming in going, well, we can, through the use of coercion and force and fiat, we can make things better and we can centrally plan either all of society or at least these certain aspects of society to be better than they are through natural human interactions in the marketplace.
Right.
And I have yet to find one instance where that's true.
Well, on that note, I do have a new endeavor, Jacob. Believe it or not, Tom Queter is taking on more things, as always.
All right, everybody, that's the end of part one. If you want to know what Thomas is doing, go ahead and go click on part two to hear what Thomas is getting up to and to hear the rest of our conversation. Thanks. Appreciate you guys listening in. And, talk to you later.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.